Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is back to basics. And I will take calls, I think, later in the show. So if you want to get in, you can listen while you're called in. So you don't have to, you won't be wasting your time or missing anything, but you will be one of the few people I get to. If you want to get in, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. But the reason I'm not going to take many calls today is because what I wanted to do with today's show is almost a reset for what is the basis for the show, for all the conversations that I have with you guys each week, for all the newsletters I send out. Hopefully, some of you guys get a chance to see. I'm kind of proud of this. I got to admit, this was my 1,000th newsletter this week. I the very first one was sent out on February 7th, 2000. And I only know that because there were 5 people who got the first newsletter as opposed to the 20,000 plus who get it now. And one of those 5 people had saved it, Elizabeth. Thank you, Elizabeth. And that was just a delight. That was such a treat that that she had the original one. And I even said in that original one, I think I'm going to write these newsletters. I don't know what I'm going to do with them. You know, maybe I'll put them on a website. Maybe one day I'll write a book. I don't know. So it was really cool to look back and see that. But it's even cooler for me to see that there is a solid foundation from which those 1,000 newsletters have come. And in fairness, that foundation shifted partway through. So it's probably a solid foundation from which the last 300 newsletters or maybe 400 newsletters have come, and a different foundation that the first 500-600 came. And so that's what I want to share today. I want to share that foundation. I want to share as best I can what it is I see that causes me to talk the way I talk. What it is I see that gets me to ask the questions of you guys when you call in that I ask. What it is I see about life that causes me to see what I see about you. And I think that's just a really useful conversation. It's very useful to come back to the fundamentals. I never learned a martial art to a high degree, but I've got friends who are black belts and, seventh level dans. And one of the things they talk about is how the secret of becoming a master is to practice the fundamentals, is to go back to basics again and again and again. And so that's what I want to do today. And that's what we're going to do. Now, if you want to read the 1,000th tip, go to supercoach.com. You can find the link to it on the front page. You can also sign up for the next 1,000 newsletters or 12 or however many I wind up doing. And we're going to have a brand new format as well, a sort of more bloggy format with videos and other things starting on Monday. So you'll get it every Monday morning. And that's free at supercoach.com. Also, congratulations. Yeah, I mean, congratulations are in order, but a big welcome to 3 new participants on Supercoach Academy. You know who you are. Which is the training school where we teach how to take these basics and build a conversation and a coaching practice out of them. And you can learn more about that at supercoachacademy.com. Enough. Let us begin. So I never know how many people have heard this story in how many different ways, but I'll tell it the way it occurs to me to tell now. The facts never change, just the spin. I got into personal development, spiritual development, self-help, business development, coaching, therapy. I got into it all for purely personal reasons. There was no noble inspiration to help others. I was really, really, really unhappy. I had suicidal ideation. I was suffering, and I wanted to suffer less. And so I was on a quest. And that quest initially was all about me. It was just get me out of pain. And it worked. I got out of a lot of the pain that I was in. I got out of a lot of the suffering I was in. And I reckoned the suffering that was left over and the pain was left over was just the human condition, and I needed to deal with it. So I explored various spiritual teachings. I explored various philosophies. I got very involved in the field called neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. And I became a practitioner. Then I became a master practitioner. Then I became a trainer. I became a master trainer. And it really was the best thing that I had found to help people get out of suffering and towards joy, to help people get unstuck and get back into the flow of life. Now, there were things about it that troubled me. And the main thing was that if you went to the pub and a bar, for those of you not in the United Kingdom, but if you went to a pub, if you went to a bar and saw groups of people, it seemed to me that if what we were teaching was the be all and end all, not that it doesn't work, not that it, of course it does. You know, look, I, so many people came to me with a phobia, left without a phobia, came blushing and left not blushing, came with a condition and left without that condition. It's a very powerful technology. However, what it didn't do was make us the happiest people in the room. What it didn't do was make us the most peaceful and grounded people in the room. If you had looked in, if you'd been in the pub and you'd looked around the pub, you would not be able to pick out the NLPers from the bricklayers, from the doctors, from the teachers, from the mums and dads, from the young guys and girls on the dole, on unemployment. You wouldn't have been able to tell energetically who taught this great self-help stuff and who'd never heard of self-help. Now that bugged me a bit, because I thought if what we're teaching is fundamental, I get it helps with what it helps with, but if it's fundamental, shouldn't we be the happiest people in the room? More or less, not like you got to walk around with a smile pasted on your face all the time. But fundamentally, it seemed to me like if what we're talking about has the kind of merit that I'm telling people that it has, I should be one of the happiest people in the room. And I often wasn't. So then one day, I was always on the lookout for anything that helped people. So by this point, I was okay. So I was no longer in it for me in the same way. I was really in it because I really enjoy seeing people get out of suffering, find joy, build successful businesses, and do great things in the world. I find that an incredibly enjoyable thing to be a part of, to contribute to. And so anytime I find something that seems to have a real impact, that's where I would look next. And in particular, I 2007, I'm reading a book called The Relationship Handbook by a guy named Dr. George Pransky, who is now one of my dear friends and mentors. And we just finished teaching a 12-week entrepreneurial program together. And it's funny how life works. But at the time, I'd never heard of him. I'd read this thing where Colin Wilson, who wrote The Outsider, he's sort of a British philosopher, had said, George Pransky is the greatest psychological mind of the 20th century. And I thought, well, that's high praise for somebody I've never heard of. So I read this book somewhat grudgingly, because I'm not a relationship book guy. Just, you know, if you didn't get that. Because I've always thought relationship books work great for the person who wrote them. But I haven't seen them work so often for the people who read them. That's not a universal. There are exceptions. You may be an exception. That was just my experience back in 2007. But I read it kind of, you know, I didn't quite hide it inside my porn magazine so nobody would see me reading it. But I, by the way, I'm just realizing, boy, that is a dated joke. See, in the old days, kids, you know, people used to hide their porn inside of books so nobody would see them read it. But I was hiding my self-help book inside of the porn. I guess people go online now. I don't know. It's been a while. But my point, and I really do have one, is I was reading this book with one eye. You know, I was half reading it. And I suddenly read this chapter where he talked about how the purpose of a relationship was to enjoy each other's company. To enjoy the company of the person that you're with. And I thought that is extraordinary. That seems self-evident to me, and I have never thought of it that way once. I always assumed the purpose of a relationship was to grow together, was to create a life together, was to create a stable environment in which to raise the next generation, was you come together for growth, not for life. Now, this despite the fact that I've been with one woman at that point. When did Nina and I got together in 1988? So, you know, it wasn't like I wasn't an example of that, but I hadn't thought about it much. And there was something about the simplicity of that. The purpose of a relationship is to enjoy each other's company. I could feel myself relax, and I continued reading the book, and there were lots of things in there about why getting better at communication wasn't the key, and why working on your problems wasn't the key, and why, you know, not going to bed angry wasn't the key. And it really changed something in me, and to the point where Nina and I had actually been in this big argument about moving house when I was reading the book, which I think is probably what prompted it, me reading it. In fact, I know that's what prompted me reading it at that time. And at the end of the week, somebody said to me, well, how's it going? I said, great. So how's it going with Nina? I said, great. I said, what about the fight? I said, what fight? And I literally couldn't remember that we'd been in this argument because it didn't seem worth arguing about at that point. Now, I got intrigued. I thought, okay, there's something here I don't understand, and it seems powerful. Let me go see what I can find out. So I looked up this thing, and it was called Psychology of Mind. It was called The Three Principles. It was called Health Realization. It had all these kind of slightly weird neocognitive therapy. It had all these slightly weird names that didn't seem to me to necessarily mean much. And I'd never heard of it. And trust me, I heard of everything. I managed two bookshops. I managed the biggest psychology bookshop in London and the biggest New Age bookshop in London for a time. So I was very tuned in, or so I thought, to what was out there. Never heard of these guys. I eventually realized Richard Carlson, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, had trained with the same people who these guys had trained with. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I've heard of him. He never talks about it in that way. He does in his early books. But I thought, oh, okay, I never connected the dots. But it was pretty obscure for something that powerful. And so I thought, hey, I know. I'm an NLPer. I am a modeler. I'm very good at reverse engineering things. I'll go figure out what it is that they do that's so powerful. And since they don't seem to be very effective at sharing it, I'll help them share it. Because that's what I do. I share stuff. It was very simple. It was, you know, I neither want to suggest that it was noble or selfish. It was just, it made sense to me. It seemed like a good idea at the time. So there was very little. Now, if you go online now and you Google three principles, you will find hundreds upon hundreds of websites and web entries and coaches and books. In 2007, there was two websites that came up, George's and funnily enough, his cousin Jack's. Those were the only two websites I could find online that mentioned the three principles. There were other people teaching them, but they just weren't online. So I started making calls. I called I looked up people in the back of the book that were mentioned or referenced in the text. I dug out other out of print books about the field that are all now back in print on the whole. I really went on a quest to see, well, what's different about these guys? What is it that they see that lets them work with people differently to what I see? Long story, I won't say long story short because I think I've been going for a while, but long story, cutting to the chase. I went up and I spent 4 days in this small town in Washington State, actually just learning one-on-one from these guys to try and, again, my goal wasn't so much to get anything for myself. I thought, you know, I'll take that as a bonus, but to see, could I figure out what they were doing so that I could learn to do it and then share it with others. And they kept saying, there are no techniques here. There is a simple truth about life and about human beings that when you see it, it makes life so much easier. It makes life so much easier to bear. It brings forward a grace and a gracefulness, a gratitude and appreciation for life. It gives you more juice for the squeeze, where you get more out of one orange than other people get out of five. It helps you to think more clearly when you see this truth more clearly. It helps you to operate in higher states of mind and perform in higher states of mind, which of course has a massive impact on the results you're able to create in the world. It takes away a lot of the noise in your relationships so that you can really just connect deeply and enjoy the company of the people that you're with. And I'm like, okay, well, that all sounds great. What's the truth? And I said this with air quotes around the truth, because I didn't believe in truth. Truth, we don't need no stinking truth, right? Truth is what people who don't realize that the universe is subjective talk about. Truth is what religious people talk about. I was somewhat contemptuous, deeply arrogant, but I was playing along. Well, much to my surprise, on the second night that I was up there, I was watching a video of a guy named Sid Banks. And Sid Banks, you've probably heard me talk about him on the show, was a Scottish welder who had a spontaneous enlightenment experience. He wasn't on a path. He wasn't studying with anyone. He wasn't training. He literally had an experience of waking up to a deeper truth about thought. He had an experience that lasted for, in his words, 2.5 seconds, that changed his life forever. And he came out of this saying, I found the true meaning of God. That's kind of cool, right? Right? It's kind of cool that that could happen to somebody who didn't work at it, that could happen to us in some way without us having to put in, you know, multiple lifetimes and multiple years of practice. But it's also recognized, well, that's sort of a once in a lifetime, five people in any generation, they say, are enlightened. So, you know, I wasn't chasing it, but I thought, interesting. So I'm watching this video of him and he's talking to an audience and I just hear him. I'm drinking a beer, having dinner, and I hear him say, every human being has innate mental health. Every human being is sitting in the middle of mental health, but they just don't know it. I don't know why I heard it as deeply as I did, but I knew it was true. Not useful, not his truth, fundamentally true for all human beings everywhere, regardless of circumstances. And I laughed so hard, the beer came out my nose. It was messy. It was ugly. And that went on for about 10 minutes until I settled down and I went, oh, crap. My second book with Hay House was meant to be called Feel Better Now, because it was just sharing all the techniques I'd learned to kind of get yourself out of suffering. And we wound up changing it to Feel Happy Now because there was a spate of happiness books at the time. And it probably wasn't a great idea, but it was essentially about how do you create happiness? So the idea was, we are essentially mostly value neutral. We are neither happy or unhappy. We are, you know, maybe we tend towards depression or psychosis. We tend towards positivity, but we're just a space of possibility. And if you do these things, I called it behavioral Prozac, and there are 10 processes in that book, you can consistently go from neutral to happy. And I get mail about that book to this day. It was very helpful to people. It had already been out in the UK. It had done well in the UK. It was about to be released in the United States. And I was about to go on a tour promoting it, a radio tour, television tour, physical tour. And I went, crap. The fundamental basis for this book is wrong, because we are not value neutral. We are fundamentally okay. We were born happy. We've learned to go away from that. We've learned to make it conditional. I'll be happy when, I'll be happy if, I'll be happy as soon as. And that really threw me at one level, but it opened something up at another, because I suddenly realized, hey, if that can be true, not just a good idea, not just a better strategy, I wonder if there are other things about life that are true. And I realized there really were. I realized that there is truth in the world. Now, how you language that truth, that's unique to you. How that truth appears to you, that's unique to you. Like, you probably know the story about the blind men and the elephant, where seven blind men, you know, are shown an elephant, and, you know, and they obviously have to feel it, and they're asked to describe its properties. And the one who's feeling its ear goes, ah, an elephant is very like a bat. And the one who's feeling its trunk goes, ah, an elephant is very like a boa constrictor. And the one who's feeling its leg goes, ah, an elephant is very like a tree. And the one who's feeling its tail goes, ah, an elephant is very like a worm. Well, the limitation is in our ability to see. There is something there to be seen. I didn't know that. Once I saw that there was truth in life, I got very, very interested, obsessed in seeing what was true, not just true in the moment, not just true for me, what is universally true for all people for all time. And what I came to see is that there are three things that are fundamentally universally true, and many, 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 many implications of those three things. And we call them in our work the three principles, because they are fundamental truths. So if you remember your high school chemistry, and I do more than most because my mom was a high school chemistry teacher, but if you remember your high school chemistry, you'll remember the periodic table of elements. And these are the fundamental building blocks. Or if you go way back, you can look up the Tom Lehrer song where he sings all the elements in a song. But these are the fundamental building blocks of all life in the physical world. You can break life down as far as these elements, but not usefully any further. Well, that's what these principles of the spiritual psychological world are. They are the smallest elements that you can usefully break life down into. And the first one, and there's no real sequence to them, but the first one that I tend to talk about is what we might call a universal mind, a divine mind, a deeper intelligence behind life. And I'm not, by deeper intelligence, suggesting there is a divine being. I don't know. I know nothing about that. I can't speak to that. But there is an intelligence behind life that is observable in the extraordinary way that life works. That the planet spins at a speed that allows us to walk around without flying off or floating off into space or being crushed into the earth. It's like, I always thought this about baseball. Those of you who watch baseball, if you watch baseball, it is amazing to me how close plays at first are, right? So the batter hits the ball and runs down to first base. And if they're out, they're usually out by about a foot. And if they're safe, they're usually safe by about a foot. Somehow they just gut the dimensions of that game such that every play would be close. Well, the entire universe has that intelligence behind it. The planet spins at the only speed it could spin. The atmosphere is made up of the only chemicals it could be made up of. We are designed to function in the only way we could function to survive on this planet. In our personal lives, in our bodies, our bodies are designed. When we vomit to get the toxins out, right? When we get a cold, our nasal cavities fill up and swell up to prevent the toxins from getting in. When we have a fever, it's our body trying to burn the toxins out. There is an intelligence behind the design of the body. There's an innate health in the body. There's an innate health in nature. There is an innate health in the mind. Our personal minds are designed for success. They're designed to bring us new thinking, to bring us new ideas. Things occur to us that are just what we need. We are part of a larger whole, and there is an intelligence to the way that whole unfolds. That's the principle of mind. Everything comes from nothing. Mind is the nothing that everything comes from, and therefore it is also everything. Well, how does everything come from nothing? Well, it comes via another principle, thought. Now, thought is not your thinking, right? Thought is not your thoughts, as in, well, you know, I think I am a bad person, and so I need to think I am a good person, and then I will be. It's not, that is a manifestation of thought. That is something created from the energy of thought. Thought is a transient energy. It is a fluid energy like water that can take any shape. It can take any form. Sid Banks said, thought is the missing link between the formless and the form. It is the vehicle through which everything comes from nothing. Without thought, there's no life. Right? The very life force is brought into form through thought. And we know this because the body is not dead when the heart stops. The body is dead when there is no brain activity. A person is considered dead when there is no brain activity, when the energy of thought is no longer working its way through the brain. Everything is made of thought. Everything comes into being from this formless intelligence via thought. The formless intelligence creates via thought. It's a fundamental building block. Thoughts come from thought. Our thinking is made of thought. Thought is the Play-Doh of the universe, right? If I make an otter and a fish and a giant alien from outer space out of Play-Doh, we could say there are three separate things now. And in one sense, there are. There is now an alien from outer space and an otter and a fish. But it would be equally true to say there's Play-Doh. Well, that's the nature of thought. That's the principle of thought. Well, how do we experience life? Okay, it's great. So there's an intelligence behind life. There's this vehicle through which the formless comes into form, through which everything comes from nothing. Where do we come into it? Well, there's this third principle, consciousness, universal consciousness. Not being awake or being asleep, but whatever it is that allows you to hear my voice in your ears. Whatever it is that allows you to feel thought move through your body and mind. Whatever it is that allows you to experience life, that's what I'm calling consciousness. And these three things, mind, the intelligence behind the system, the energy of all things, whether in form or formless, thought, the missing link between the form and the formless, the Play-Doh of the universe, the infinite creative potential of life. And consciousness, the special effects department, the screen on which our thoughts are displayed that we then experience back through our senses, the animating force that makes our thoughts show up in our body as feelings. Every human experience is made up of thought, mind, and consciousness. These are the three fundamental principles through which all human experience is created. So what? I hear you ask. Actually, I don't hear you ask that. But you might be going, okay, cool, I kind of get that, I guess, I think, maybe. What does this have to do with me? Well, it turns out it has everything to do with you. It has everything to do with your experience of life. It has everything to do with how much joy and peace and love you experience in your life. It has everything to do with how responsive you are to the bombings in Paris. It has everything to do with how successful you are in your business. It has everything to do with how much love there is in your relationship with your husband or wife or kids or friends or any other person in the world. Your experience is made up of mind, thought, and consciousness. Let's explore a few of the implications of that. Well, one implication of that is that without the misuse of thought, what's left? So if thought was just left to the intelligence of life to create from, if we were simply neutral vehicles, right? We didn't have any thoughts of our own, and we didn't have thoughts that other people put into us. We only heard God's thoughts in our minds. Well, there'd be a certain perfection to that, right? We experience pure consciousness, uncontaminated by our personal thinking. We would live in the oneness of life. We would live in perfect harmony with the universe. Now, we don't do that because we have this thing called free will. We don't have to align our personal mind with the universal mind. We can be big boys and big girls, and we can do it ourselves. Now, that's really cool, but it also is the source of all human suffering. Because the further away our personal creative thinking goes from the universal intelligence behind life, the more out of whack we get, the more out of harmony we get. When we start thinking that our feelings can come direct from an outside world, that they're coming at us, not through us, well, we suddenly have quite a stake in what's going on in that outside world. If the outside world can get me, I might want to get it first. Right? If you can hurt me, I'm going to defend myself against you, or I'm going to attack you before you can attack me. If my bank balance can make me happy or sad, scared or safe, I'm going to do everything I can figure out to do to make sure my bank balance is above whatever number I've made up of thought is the right number, is the safe number, even though that number changes not only from year to year, but from person to person, and sometimes from hour to hour. We live in the feeling of thought. We live in an experience of thought, a thought-created experience in the moment. But it really looks like we live in the feeling of the world. We live in the feeling of our circumstances. We live in the feeling of other people. We live in the feeling of what's happening around us. And so the world becomes a pretty scary place, and we develop whatever defenses we develop, whatever security blankets we develop, whatever mitigators, the alcohol, the drugs, the sex, the gambling, the shopping, the whatever we find comforts us in the face of this scary, terrifying, frightening world that can get us. But it can't. Now, our bodies are of that world, so it can get our bodies. But spirit is spirit. Life is life. Life doesn't go anywhere when my life ends. If you haven't listened to Anita Morjani, I know she's got a new show here on Hay House Radio. Read her book. I was so fortunate to get a chance to spend a little bit of time with her. Interviewed her for the Hay House World Summit. Got to meet her at a couple of events. She got to see it. She got a glimpse. Life goes on within you and without you, as the Beatles said. Well, if we correct that misunderstanding, there's really only two fundamental misunderstandings. That's one. We think our experience of life comes at us from the outside in. It always and only comes through us, from the inside out. The other fundamental misunderstanding, the other place where we human beings just miss the boat, is we think we are our bodies. We think we are our personalities. We think we are our past, our history. We think we are the sum total of the thoughts we have thought up until this point, the actions we have taken, the, you know, what we have sown and what we have reaped. We do not see that we are of this larger intelligence. We are made of the self-same Play-Doh as the rest of the universe. When it says we're made in God's image, well, we have a mind, just like there's a universal mind. We have an intellect, just like there's an intelligence. We have the capacity to create from nothing. And we can do that in harmony and alignment with the universal flow. Or we can try and do it on our own, and sometimes it'll work, and sometimes it'll go terribly, terribly wrong. We think that we are our bodies. We don't see that we are God, that we are of the divine. I don't mean you're God like you're up there in the sky with the thing. I unless you are, in which case, hey, dude, sorry for anything I have ever said to offend you, and let me do 100 prostrations. I'm going to assume that you're not listening in that way, that you don't hear me in that way, that when I say you are divine, you are of this deeper intelligence behind life, you can see that at a deeper level, what looks out at the world through your eyes is exactly the same as what looks out at the world through mine. That we are not only related biologically, can't remember the exact figure, but it is less than 0.1% of genetic difference between any two people on the planet. But there's zero difference at the level of spirit. There is one universal energy taking 7 billion forms. And then each one of those forms has the free will to create its own universe of experience, its own world of thought. The miracle isn't that, how is it that we misunderstand each other? How is it that there's so much confusion in the world? How is it that we mistreat each other so? The miracle is that with 7 billion different worlds, separate realities, we get on so well. We're not at each other's throats more often. You are the infinite creative potential of the entire universe. No pressure, right? And the reason there's no pressure is because you're of the intelligence behind life. You are of this deeper mind. It will take care of you if you let it. It will guide you if you let it. It will carry you like the water, the ocean carries a boat. Right. There's a line in the Inside Out Revolution that I wrote that came from one of my mentors. And he said, you know, talking about surfers, no matter how much work the surfer thinks he's doing, the ocean's really doing the heavy lifting. No matter how hard you're working at your life, life's what's carrying you. Now, the more conscious of that you become, the easier your experience of life gets. The more beautiful it becomes, the more flow you start to experience in your life, because life flows. Thought is designed to flow. We're designed to have a continual flow of fresh thought, but we ruminate, we bring up the old thoughts, we try and fix what's already written in the stars. We don't realize that we can just pick a new star. In any moment, you can go back to the blank page. You can go back to the well and get fresh water. You can come back to the present moment where nothing is yet written. where everything is possible, where nothing is a given. Now, this is a spiritual understanding, right? You don't, if you think that human beings are it, this won't make a lot of sense. Now, I say this coming from a family where at some level, there was a lot of certainty when I was growing up that human beings were it. But I'm not talking religion because I have no grounds to talk religion. I don't know anything more than you. I probably know less than you. But I know about the divine because I live in it. I am made of it. And so are you. And to the extent that that permeates my consciousness moment by moment, my experience of life is incredibly rich. To the extent that I'm able to see that everything is being made up out of thought. And I don't have to believe what I think. I don't have to force myself to think different things or even to stop thinking. I can allow the flow of thought to flow. And I can rest in mind. I can rest in the purity of consciousness. I can rest in the peace of mind. Even while my thoughts are going crazy, because they're not really mine. Right? You ever notice that? How many of your thoughts do you choose? Right? They're yours because they happen to be there. They happen to be in your physical head. So I guess they're your thoughts. There's an old, people always laugh at my obscure references. In Pirates of Penzance, Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, very good movie made of it with the guy from Herman's Hermits and Kevin Kline, I think, played the Pirate King. But, oh, and Linda Ronstadt actually was in it as well. But in Pirates of Penzance, there's a character that, this is the only character most people remember, the modern major general. I am the very model of a modern major general. I have information, animal and mineral and vegetable. Anyways, there's this scene where the young pirate Frederick comes across the major general, and he's sitting in his the crypt, the sort of cemetery on the grounds of the home where he lives, and he's weeping. And Frederick goes, "What do you weep for, sir?" And he goes, "My ancestors. I'm weeping for my ancestors." And Frederick says to him, "But I thought you only bought this place a couple of years ago." And he said, "Well, I did." He said, "Well, then surely the people buried here aren't your ancestors." And he said, "I bought this place, including the cemetery. I own it. So if these aren't my ancestors, I'd like to know whose they are." Well, we do that with thought. We take ownership of thought because it happens to be passing through our head when we look. Thought is an independent variable. What you think is very little to do with you. But we can grab on to thoughts. We can hold on to thoughts. We can choose thoughts. We can recreate our own thoughts and the feelings that come with them. We can ruminate on a thought. We can chew a thought like a cow chews its own cud. And then we get steeped in the experience of that thought. Now, if you're aware that that's what's going on, it's very natural to stop doing it, right? If I have a pain in my arm, like a sharp stabbing pain in my arm, and then I suddenly notice that I keep stabbing myself with a fork in my arm, right? How do I stop? Well, if I really see that that's the cause of my pain, I'm done. Never going to do it again. Not going to happen. But if I just practice not stabbing myself in the arm with a fork, well, that's going to take some time. That's a habit. I'm going to need to change that. All of the sort of things that we think have to happen for us to get out of pain, that we have to learn to get out of pain, those go out the window if you see that the only cause of the pain is a thought believed. Once you see it for what it is what it is. You know, how do you change a thought? Well, how do you change a cloud? Well, I don't change clouds. Exactly. because you see them for what they are. You have a degree of understanding of the nature of clouds. You can see that a cloud is a part of a larger system. When there's too much moisture in the atmosphere, it forms into a cloud. And when there's so much moisture in the cloud, it darkens. And when it gets to a certain critical mass, it rains. And the water comes out. Well, I'm not going to mess with that. I'm not going to start messing with the weather because I've got a picnic. I mean, I'll take it into account. I might bring an umbrella. Right? You know the old Scottish saying, there's no such thing as bad weather, only the wrong clothes. Right? Nobody, almost nobody that I have ever met. There was that villain Sean Connery played in the Avengers movie with Ralph Fiennes, but almost nobody thinks it would be worthwhile learning to control the weather. Right? Learning to control the shape of a cloud or its water content. You get clouds are part of the ecosystem, but it's okay because there's a sun. And that sun brings life forth on the entire planet. Well, in the same way, it's not a problem that you have thoughts. It's not a problem if your thoughts are negative. It's not a problem if your thoughts are dark. It's not a problem if your cloud is shaped like a monster or shaped like a dog. Right? Well, which would you prefer, a cloud shaped like a dragon or a cloud shaped like a puppy? Oh, the puppy, that would be much less scary. Well, that's just a weird, I mean, personally, I'd quite like to see the dragon. Sounds kind of cool. But if I say, hey, which would you rather have, a really scary thought or a really cute thought? Chances are you go, I want the cute thoughts. How do I have more of the cute thoughts? I don't want those scary thoughts. But we don't see that it's the very idea that thoughts have some sort of independent power over us that makes us want to control them, that makes us want to change them. Because we don't see them as part of an unfolding of a larger intelligence, we think we need to become the masters of them to have wonderful lives. We don't. Any more than we need to control the clouds to have wonderful lives. The clouds will change and come and go all by themselves. They're a transient property, a temporary form of the sky, of the air. Well, that's what thoughts are. Our thoughts are a temporary form that the energy of thought takes as part of the overall ecology of mind. And the sun is always there. It's there when we see it and feel it. It's there when we don't. The deeper intelligence of mind is always there. There when we see it. There when we don't. The potential of experience that is consciousness is always there. Whatever it happens to be filled with. Right? If I cook a fried egg and then I cook a bolognese for some spaghetti and then I cook, I saute some mushrooms and then I make something else. I'm running out of food analogies here. Must be coming up on lunchtime. So the constant is the pan. The constant is the heat. The variable is the content. Well, in the same way, the heat of mind is a constant. The frying pan of consciousness is a constant. The thoughts that go into the pan are a constant variable. But the pan doesn't care what you cook in it. The heat doesn't care what's being cooked in the pan. They're simply present. You don't have to worry about what to think when. Not your job. Not your problem. And do you know what happens when you start to see that? You experience more flow. You know what happens when you start to see that? When you stop adding thought on thought and thinking about thinking and trying to control your thinking is you experience less thinking and more space. And that space inside us, that spaciousness is what meditators are trying to get to. It's the space of meditation. But it's always present. It's always available. It's your nature. It's my nature. It's all our natures. It's natural. And the space of meditation doesn't disappear when thoughts come through it. But our attention goes to the thoughts and away from the space. But that's okay. The solution to that isn't to have better thoughts. It's to redirect our attention back to the space inside of which the thoughts come and go. How do you do that? Well, it's really quite a natural thing to do, like not stabbing yourself in the arm with a fork once you see that all the suffering is coming from getting caught up in the thinking, and all the peace and joy and creativity is coming from staying with the space. We're really bright, us human beings. We don't give ourselves enough credit. If it takes you an hour to get to work every day in traffic, and I show you a shortcut that takes 5 minutes, you're there. Doesn't matter if you've been going to work the same way for 30 years. Right? You might one morning be really caught up, take the old way and go, oh, what was I thinking? But you'll be back on the shortcut the next day. When you see what is available to you, as you start to get a feel for what it's like to live your life in this spaciousness of mind, in this purity of consciousness, enjoying the thoughts that come and go, like you enjoy the clouds in the sky on a beautiful day, but not trying to control them, not trying to make them appear in a certain order in a certain way. You get to be truly present. And when you are truly present, the entire world opens itself up to you. It's like the Kafka quote, right? There's a quote by Franz Kafka. I knew Franz Kafka as the cockroach guy, right? That was how I'd always thought of him as he wrote a book, story, Metamorphosis. But he was quite the philosopher. He wrote, "You do not need to leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. Do not even listen. Simply wait. Do not even wait. Be quite still and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet." That's what's on offer. That's the human potential. That's the natural fruit of a deeper understanding of the principles at the core of the human experience. That's the essence of the inside-out understanding. That's what we talk about on the show each week. And what a lot of people say is the more they listen, the better life gets. But what that really means is the more they listen, the less they worry about what they're thinking. And the less they worry about what they're thinking, the less they have on their mind. And the less you have on your mind, the better life gets. So I hope you've enjoyed our Back to Basics for today. You can always check us out online at supercoach.com. You can learn more at supercoachacademy.com. Check us out on Facebook at Michael, is it my name, Michael Neal? I'm not sure, but there's all sorts of fun for you. And I hope you'll come back and join us again. Till next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.